What's up, everybody? I'm Matt, the host of the Beard Laws Podcast, a podcast that has nothing to do with beards, a podcast where we aim to entertain and interact with our live viewers, but our listeners. They're like the quiet person that never talks sitting around the bonfire because the rest of the group is so entertaining, hilarious, wild, and a little bit dumb. So grab a drink, grab a snack, and let Beard Laws and the boys, Toby, Brandon, Logan, Zach, Richie, and our occasional special guest entertain you. We're live on the Beard Laws YouTube Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and for every reason you want to see us and or our beards. Check us out, thebeardlawspodcast.com. We're everywhere.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Deluxe Edition. I'm your host, Casey Shearer. Joining me, as always, L. Ray Sexton.
What's going on, Casey?
Not too much, buddy. How are you?
We're having a great Sunday. Yeah, that's what we do.
Such a great Sunday.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this. Do you think I should change that? Because I say that exact same thing every single week.
No, you should not change it because it makes it easy for me. Because then I say, hey, you know, what the fuck's going on, Casey? You know, it makes it easy. So don't change anything.
All right. This was a great episode, man. Had a blast tonight. My buddy, Jason Paul Januzzi, who I've known for many years, over 15 years. He was in a band called Citizens Band Radio, who I fell in love with many, many years ago. And I've been trying to get him on the podcast for many years. He finally agreed to do it. And we'll get into it in just a few minutes after this quick house cleaning. What do you say, Ray?
Sounds good.
All right. We are a part of the Deluxe Edition Network. You can find all of the other great shows on the network over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com. The podcasts of the month this month are Bacon Is My Podcast and Beard Laws. Go check them out, deluxeeditionnetwork.com. If you'd like to see any of our previous shows, you could go over to deluxeedition.show. Check them all out. I have them all over there, conveniently located in one spot. We are also on Instagram over at deluxeeditionpod. Ray handles all the duties over there. What are you doing over there, Ray?
We're doing memes and we're doing reels. So come check them out. Hit some likes and shit and share and put them in your stories. You know, don't be stingy. Get over there. Do some shit.
Yeah, if you share our stuff, it really helps us a lot.
Yep.
We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/deluxeeditionpod. You can email us. Let us know how you feel over at deluxeeditionpod@gmail.com. Come support us, buy a t-shirt, whatamaneuver.net, search for Deluxe Edition. Or if you'd really like to support our show, you can go over to patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod and find all of the shows immediately after they're recorded and unedited. You can hear about what Ray and I talk about before and after the show. And this week's podcast, Ray, is brought to you by Copper John's Beard Products. Go over to copperjohnsbeard.com and use code DELUXE10 to save 10% off of your entire order. And just a quick heads up for everyone. If you go to our Etsy page, which the link will be in the description, you can pre-order some of our beard butter and beard oil. We have partnered with Copper John's and we have a deluxe edition scent. There is only 24 available. Actually, at the time of this recording, there's only 20 available. I've already pre-sold 4 of them. So get over there now and check it out. It's a scent that Ray and I came up with. There's a lot of different stuff in there, and I've tried it. It smells amazing.
It smells like testosterone.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. So go check it out. And I think that's it, Ray. What do you think?
I think we need to get to the interview.
All right. Here's our sweet-ass conversation with Jason Paul Januzzi.
Hey, what's happening, boys?
What's up, brother?
You know, I wanted to have a beer in honor of Ray because I don't really know Ray too well. But unfortunately, I only have an Italian soda. This isn't cut. It's not going to cut it, but you know.
Well, I'll drink the beer for both of us. It'll be fine.
I know you will. I definitely know you're going to do that.
I got us. We'll be fine.
And I was going to tell you, everybody here, I just found this. It's called Good Boy. Do you guys hear this John Daly drink now? The Good Boy Vodka?
No.
It's Good Boy Vodka, iced tea, and lemonade. It's called the John Daly Cocktail. You know how they had the Arnold Palmer, the tea and lemonade? Yeah. Well, I guess they added vodka to it, and now it's called the John Daly.
See, we've been doing that for fucking 2 years. Me and my boys, we've been doing the John Daly for a couple of years now. So, yeah.
They have he announced he's been plugging it on his TikTok and Instagram and everything lately. And there was an ad the other day that I saw. It said, if you want to up your golf game, drink 10 of these and go play a round of golf. So I have 7 of them here. We're going to try and get through this podcast and see how many I can get through with 7 of them. So nice.
7. Oh, boy.
I call that Tuesday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I know. You guys are. That's a long time gone for me. In the old days, I could do that, but now, forget about it.
Man. So let's get into a little bit of our history here, Jay, man. So I was looking back in. I think I've narrowed it down to the day we might have met. I think that I came to see your band, and I'm wearing this is an old school shirt. I had to go up into the attic and find this Citizens Band Radio shirt here. I think I saw you guys at Porter's Pub in Easton, Pennsylvania, December 18th, 2009.
So we're 15 years. That's what I thought. I thought it was about 15 years. I said, those years kind of roll together for me a little bit. But I was trying to think back to when you and I crossed paths. What's interesting is since we're here on a podcast is you were the first guy I remember. You came up to me, you know, the band was fairly popular, although Porter's Pub's a small place. But and you came up to me and you go, I'm starting a podcast. And you want to come on? And I go, what the hell is a podcast? I think I heard of that, but I was like, you know, at that point, I was on Sirius XM pretty regular as a guest host, and I was on the radio like 2-3 times a month, and for the band, you know, doing band spots. So I was just like, well, we're gonna go on a computer and talk? What? I don't even understand what you're talking about. So I mean, that's that far back, which is like, I didn't even know podcasts existed at that point. So you know, as far as podcasts go, you are old school. I will give you that.
That was for my other podcast. That was that's going back pretty far there that I asked you about that, because that was Saturdays with Chicken Duck. I think I started that around like 7 years ago or so.
Yeah. Oh, it seems like it's even a lot further back to me. I have a good Casey story. We might have to wait a little while to get into it, but we have a couple stories. You were around a lot, you know, back then, and we were playing quite a bit, but
I want to tell like my side of the story and then sort of like get your perspective on all because like
all right. You tell yours first. I'm not sure which story this is.
You know what? I don't know. I want to hear Jason's version first.
Which story are you talking about? The Austin, Texas trip?
Well, yeah, like kind of just like,
yeah, I don't want to hear your bullshit version, Casey. I want to hear his version.
Okay, so if you want me to sum this up, because you know, this is a different time, you got to remember back then, Ray, I was drinking a lot. It was, I remember we were at John and Peter, so we were when Casey met us, we were playing kind of honky tonks, but we were playing a lot. And we played John and Peter's, which is this small little club in New Hope. And I would be in the front and they would line up Jack Daniel's shots for me. People would buy them and line them up. I'm talking 15 at a time. And the club came to us afterwards and they go, well, we officially sold out of Jack Daniel's. Everybody. They said it never happened before. And they go, but it wasn't the crowd. It was the band.
Yeah.
It was like the Blues Brothers movie. I swear to God. I think we made $250 in tips, and they came up to me with like a $375 alcohol bill. And the crowd was buying us drinks, so it was way beyond that. But we had this 1957 tour bus. It was like an old Greyhound bus, you know, and the band crashed. And whenever we did trips, we would bring three or four people with us. More times than not, it was girls, not for the, you know, that aspect that you're thinking of, but girls were just easier to deal with. You never knew with a guy what they were going to, you know, what the deal was going to be. But Casey, you know, when I came across him, I was like, this guy's a special guy. He, you know, first you look at him, you think, what am I going to get here? What am I getting? But he really is good at socializing. He knows exactly how to show. So he's always happy. He's always on target. He's never a problem. You know, so after, I mean, because this is like 2 years later, because it was 2011, I think that trip was. So I'm sizing him up because he comes up to me and he goes, hey, you think I could go on the Texas run? And I go, I don't know, man. Those, you know, there's three or four spots for outsiders. I said, I don't know. But I thought about it. I go, you know what? I think he's going to be all right. So Casey goes, look, I'll tell you what. You got to let me on. I will come on. I will roadie for you. I will carry amps. I will, because at that point, I'm the band leader. I'm the songwriter. I'm the front man. But I'm also the bus driver. So on these trips, and we had taken several of them, I'm driving 10 to 14 hours, loading in, doing a 4-hour show. I sleep for 1 hour on loadout, and then I drive another 14 hours. And that's my tour. That's how my tour goes. So Casey's like, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to do whatever you need. I'm going to be there for you. And I go, all right, you got the spot. You got the spot. I like, you got a great attitude, and I like what you're saying. So we get in, and it is. It's like, it's not one of these wonderful things that everybody thinks that bands do when they're on the road. You know, they think there's partying going on the bus. And I'm sure I had to pull myself out of that because I was the driver. And so I started pulling myself out of the parties because when you're making those runs, it's like, forget about it. So we rolled down to West Virginia to start to some junky little club. Then we drove to Asheville, North Carolina. Then we went to Memphis, and then we landed in Austin. And those gigs going were, you know, they were like the same places we played in New Jersey. Everyone was always just like, why are you playing these places in Memphis? Then the band would be like, I go, we got to get out of state. We got to get on the road. But they would be the same junky place that we were playing, you know, in Reddington, Pennsylvania or wherever, down in Memphis, right? So we were losing money at that point on the road. So we get all the way down to Austin, right? And we're going to be in Austin, I think, for like 7 days or something like that. It was South by Southwest. So it was a bunch of shows. We were playing like two shows a day, I think. And we get there and we pull up and Casey goes, hey, I got a friend here. He just called me. I'm going to go meet up with him. And I go, okay, yeah, no problem, whatever. So we go through this whole run in Texas. You know, we played, I think, 8 gigs in 7 days. You know, we're bopping around doing this. And we're about to leave. It's like 9 a.m., 10 a.m. on the morning we're leaving. And I go, geez, I never saw Casey this whole time.
Get the hell out of here. Casey?
And I'm like, you know, back then, you know, it was like people did crazy things. So I was like, well, maybe he got on a plane and flew back home, or maybe he's going to stay with buddy. I swear to God, the bus is about to pull out. Here he comes bopping up the road. Here comes Casey with the smile on his face. He kind of just looks at me like, hey, Jay, and jumps on the bus, back on the bus. And I go, I can't even believe this. Now, apparently he was keeping up with other people in the band. He wasn't saying anything to me about his whereabouts, you notice. But I mean, that's what I remember. That's how I remember going down. I mean, you can't be mad. The guy is impossible to be mad at. So at that point, and I was kind of like Ronnie Van Zant was my hero as a band leader. So I was easy on the guys if they screwed things up. So But Casey, it was kind of like, you know, what am I going to do? This guy is not, I can't even get mad at this guy. He did, you know, he does what he does.
Well, I mean, he's not, it's not like he's a musician, so you can't be that mad at him for what he's up to.
No, but he was supposed to carry some amps, you know. He was supposed to relieve me of some of my duties because I was working hard. And
Casey, did you not fulfill your obligations to the band?
Well, I don't remember things exactly going just like that, because I remember being around you guys quite a bit in Austin. I was hanging, that was the reason that I wanted to go with you guys, was to hang out with my buddy Sharky, who had moved out there a little while ago before that. And I was hanging with him quite a bit, but so you missed there's a bunch of stuff you missed there. So like I don't remember if like texting was a thing then, or like how, or if, maybe I did come up to you at a show, I guess, and asked you about coming on the ride, but I was like, you were like, well, I'm gonna, you know, we're heading down 78, and I was like, well, dude, I live like three blocks away from Route 78. So I walked with my suitcase up to the fucking top of the ramp on 78, and you guys just pulled off of the ramp and picked me up.
Yeah, that's how things were back then. I don't think there was texting. I think it was, if there was, it was not everybody was doing it. So, you know, I don't think the guys in the band were doing it. But that doesn't surprise me. You know, I mean, when you look at the bus we were traveling on, you're talking about a 1957 Greyhound bus, and it's just couches with some cots and beds in the back, but couches and like a kitchen and a bathroom and stuff. But it's like, it was a motorhome inside. It was hollowed out and turned into a motorhome. So we were doing that with everybody. Our pedal steel player was in Philadelphia. I think I had to drive and pick him up on the street in Philadelphia. I had to drive the bus through Philadelphia and pick him up on the street. Then, yeah, I kind of remember what you're saying now. I was just like, oh, God, now Casey's giving me this. I got to pick him up on the side of 78. I had no idea that you had walked up there with your suitcase. I just figured you got dropped off or something, probably.
Yeah, no, I literally only lived like three blocks away from there, so I just walked up. But yeah, then we went to, I think it was West Virginia. Then we went to it was Black Mountain, North Carolina. I've been wanting to go back to that town since then. That was a fucking really cool little town.
Black Mountain's totally changed. Black Mountain's almost more like Asheville now. It's just there. It was like so quiet when we went to that gig. Now it's like hustle bustle. The stores are all hopping, and Asheville is just crazy. Yeah. So, but it's still cool. It's still really cool.
Yeah. So then, yeah, we went to Memphis. And I don't know if you remember this about the Memphis place. There was a guy there. It was like my doppelganger. Like, I met my doppelganger, and you guys were all like, dude, you didn't know. We didn't know that your like cousin was going to be here. I was like, I've never seen this fucking guy before. He looked exactly like me. It was like one of these. I actually had to get up and walk away because it was like looking into a fucking mirror.
Well, you know, what you got to realize is the tough part for me was, and you probably remember, is I was running the whole show.
Right.
So like you were hanging, you know, the rest of the band were like in just hangout mode. We're just going to have fun and let Jay handle everything. So you were mostly probably hanging out with him. So I kind of tried to ignore everyone because I also was sick. I was like, when we left for that trip, I remember I was thinking about now, I actually couldn't sing a lot of songs, and I sang the majority. So the band had to like try to take over, because like the Memphis gig was like a 4-hour gig or something like that. So like I had to try to sing with like a blown out voice. I wasn't hanging with the gang as much, unfortunately. So you'll have to remind me of some of these details.
some of the details that I remember, man. Like Linda cooked almost every meal on the bus.
Yeah.
The whole way there until we crossed into Texas. And I never forget this, because I think it might have been the first time that I ever had it. It was the country fried steak. You went in to get gas at this gas station, and you came like out in a fucking hustle, and you're like, tell Linda to stop cooking. We're eating here today. And like, so I remember Jay used to have this big giant beard. Oh, and dude, I remember him turning around, and like there's this gravy in the beard from the country fried steak, and he's like, man, if every place on earth made food like this, everybody would get along great.
It was, we had pulled into, it was Texarkana. We had just, And we had two gas stations, and I said, oh, it's a Texaco. We should go to Texaco. We're going into Texas, right? That was my thinking back then. So we pulled into this Texaco station, and it was a rundown old gas station. And I walk in, and in the back, there's these two ladies. They're huge, big, you know, Texas ladies, and they're cooking up these sandwiches. And I was out of my mind. That was, I remember that experience. I mean, we did like CB radio did, you know, 9 or 10 of these kind of trips. So this one I'm trying to recollect because of you, but yeah, I remember that Texaco station in Texarkana. And I do remember kind of freaking out about the chicken fried steak sandwiches. Yep.
Yeah, that shit was so good. So then one of the other things that we did, we get to South by Southwest tour, and then we're there, and somehow we end up at Dave Miller's house, who was the bass player for Asleep at the Wheel.
Yeah.
And you walk into his house, he's got like 4 Grammy Awards there. For some reason, he knew immediately that me and Kevin were the pot smokers of the like group, and he's like, "Come with, follow me." Took us into the garage, and then we ended up at Ray Benson's. I think it was his 60th.
Oh, so you were there a lot then.
I was there.
I'm telling a fake story, because if you were at Ray Benson's birthday party, then you were there. For some reason, I just had in my mind that Casey was just like, he's gone and I don't see him till the end. But I was a little separate, because if you want the back, you want the back end story on Dave Miller on that whole
reason we were there?
Of course we do.
So we had a gig up in Rhode Island, and we were opening for Asleep at the Wheel at Newport. Is that Rhode Island? Newport Jazz Club. It's not a big club up in, I think it's Rhode Island or New Hampshire. No, Rhode Island. So what, we drove all day, and we get to this club at like, a lot of people don't realize with bands, you know, you show up at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon to sound check and then wait around like a bunch of idiots for the show. So, and when you're the opening band, and I was trying to get us to break at that point, you try, if you're smart, to show up when the headliner show up so you could connect with them, because they're going to sound check first and then you're going to wait for them. So we get up to this club, and for us, I mean, it should be like a six hour ride or something like that. But when you've got a 1957 tour bus, it's a 10 hour ride, right? So we get up there and we pull in front of a club, and the owner comes out and he goes, "Oh my God, you guys, no one got a hold of you. There's not going to be a show tonight." And I go, "What are you talking about?" They go, "Asleep at the Wheel is broke down in Boston." And I go, "You got to be kidding me." And they're like, "They're trying to figure it out, but it's not going to happen. They're trying to get the roadies to get the equipment into a U-Haul, but there's no way for them." I go, "How far is Boston?" I said, "I'm taking this bus up to Boston." So I left the band in the club, and I got in the bus, and I flew up to Boston. I pulled in. They had a brand new $1 million Prevost. It broke down. It was at the shop. And I pull in and I look at them, and they're starting to walk on the bus. And, you know, Asleep at the Wheel for Texas is a big deal. You know, people up here don't know them as much, but like, they're like second to Willie Nelson down there. They're like a pretty big deal. So we know all about them. So these guys are walking on the bus, and I go, "Oh, what happened? You know, your Prevost broke down. I have to pick you up in a 1957 tour bus." And I'm sort of busting their chops, you know, and they go, one guy goes, "Oh, a 1957 PD4104 with a 671 Detroit diesel engine in it." I go, "Oh shit, this guy knows about this bus." And they go, "Yeah, in the 70s, this is the exact style bus we toured in." So Dave Miller, the bass player, sits be. So then what happens is Dave Miller, the bass player, sits behind me, and I was never a truck driver or a bus driver. So I'm like grinding gears in that thing all day long. So he's sitting behind me going, "Jay, you got a double clutch." He's teaching me how to drive the bus that I've been driving for 2 years, all the way back to Rhode Island. So we get him to Rhode Island, and it's like 30 minutes before showtime. They're not even, their roadies are there. They've done a pseudo sound check. Our band's there. Our band handled getting everything together. We jump on stage. I pull in. I jump on stage. We do, you know, a 40-minute slot. They come up. And Dave Miller grabs me and goes, man, you know, what you just did was pretty cool because we don't like to cancel shows. We rarely ever cancel a show. So he goes, if you're ever down in Austin, Texas, look me up. I will put you up. And I go, well, it's interesting you said that because next month we're at South. I mean, this is a month before South by Southwest. Yeah. I go over, and he goes, I'm not kidding you. We got to Texas. We pulled up to Dave Miller's house. He put like a third of the people up at his house, another third up at a friend's house, and he put me and Linda up at another house, three houses. He let us use his pickup truck, and he actually roadied for us. He drove around and actually carried equipment for us. And he got us into Ray Benson's birthday party, which was like a ton of like famous country music people. And it was incredible. So it all worked out. You know, that's the backstory to that. And sometimes stuff happened. And it turned out on the way back from Rhode Island, they got busted in their bus with weed. That was the time when Willie was getting busted all the time. And I had a, on the back of the bus, I had Willie on one side. I had a sticker that said Willie on one side and I had Waylon on the other side. And when the cops pulled me over, they'd be like, what's Willie and Waylon? And I was always like, oh, geez, this is not going to be good. But three times cops pulled us over and they looked in the bus and they just looked down the alleyway at the guys and they were like, just go. We don't even want to see what's going on in there. And they just let us go. But so that's how we ended up at Dave Miller's and put up like that, which was a cool thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was awesome. I remember the one night we were, I guess it was after a long day of shows. Like you guys were playing a bunch out there. We all ended up back at his house and there was like a lot of drinking going on. And like that guy, like I smoke a lot of pot, but that guy, like, it just kept going. And like, I had to actually like tap out at one point. And I remember, Cabinet was in town for South by Southwest at that time. And, I was like, yeah, I was like, come on. You know, I asked Dave if it was cool. And like, they came over to Dave's house. And then like they started like picking out back and I don't know who else was, but like it started, you know, it was going into like the wee hours of the morning. And like, I think Dave might've started getting a little like, you know, cause it was getting a little late and I was like, I was fucked up. I just went and passed out on the bus. And then I remember the next day, he came to see Cabinet at, it was that club on the corner that smelled like piss. I can't remember the name of it.
There was only one club like that.
you can tell Casey's not a musician because he thinks there's only one club that smells like this.
I don't remember. I remember one club that wasn't like that, but go ahead. I think I know
you're going. It was right across, it was directly across the street from Stubbs.
I know which one you're talking about.
I remember Dave came to see the Cabinet then, and then same thing happened. Like he threw like a bunch of money in their case because it was like just a free show that they were playing. And he said the same thing to them, like, "Hey, if you guys are ever in town, you know, let me know. I'll put you guys up." And then he looked at me. He's like, "Why the fuck did you tell me that they were this?" And I was like, "I was hammered."
Yeah. Yeah, he was a cool. He's a cool guy. He's a really cool guy for sure. I remember now you're telling that story. I remember that story because I got that story secondhand because I wasn't there for that party. I was staying kind of away and doing a lot of the business stuff. And because you guys didn't realize because you were all smoking weed and drinking that I was walking around making contacts for the band. Like I was down there to work. The rest of the band is down there to hang out with Casey. And I got that from somebody and I was just shaking my head going, oh my God, this guy puts up my guys and they just turn his place into a party central. I go, this is unbelievable. And I was just like, just let it go. Whatever. You know, you're a band on the road. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he got over it. He was all right with it. He was cool as shit. A couple people, flew home then I think, right? Andy, this pedal steel player, he flew home and I can't remember who else, but then we added someone else came on onto the tour. There were actually two other people that came onto the bus then. It was the guy from New York.
I know what you're talking about. It was another band.
Yeah,
brought another band back. Yeah, I sent home I think I sent home three band members on flights because they had something to do. And we brought another band back. That's right. Oh, my God. And those guys were the worst. They were awful. That was a disaster going back. That caused all kinds of problems, actually. They got on the bus. They took the whole front of the bus, right? And they started – they were spilling wine all over stuff. In fact, Linda had bought this vintage pair of, like, leather bell bottoms for, like, $200. They were like, genuine article. And she went on a flight, and she left a bag up front, and they spilled wine all over those pants. They completely ruined the pants. Yeah. And then we were going to do – what we were doing is we were going to do shows with them going back. They were going to do shows, and we were going to, like, special – guest appearance stuff. Then we got to all the clubs, and it was like CB Radio's playing. The clubs had announced CB Radio was playing, and I go, it was Jack Grace.
Jack Grace.
I said, what? CB Radio's playing. I said, half of the band's not even here. Well, I don't know, understand what's going on. They weren't amazing clubs or anything, so it didn't really matter. But and then I remember we got up to Washington, D.C. the final woman's Hill Country Barbecue in D.C. I remember that because, man, I was out of my mind. I think I drove 15 hours to get to D.C. Get into D.C., the club was supposed to have parking. I mean, this is a 35-foot tour bus. They had no blocked-off parking. I'm in the middle of D.C. I drop off the band, and I'm circling for like an hour after I drove 15 to get a spot. I get down into the club. And I think it's their show, and it's CB Radio. And I sit down, and I'm just fried. I'm toast at this point in their tour. And they're like, Jay, you got to get up on stage. They expect you to get up there to carry the show. And I was just like, yeah, you got to be kidding me. I don't know if I could do it. I think I went up for like three or four songs and just said, sorry, this is your CB Radio experience. But, you know, we're going to lose some fans tonight, but whatever.
I remember it being that way. It was like that. That was the whole thing. Like they were supposed to come along, and then it ended up being the other way around, that they were like the guests.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of weird, but we stayed, you know what else I remember? We stayed in that really cool ranch when we left Austin.
Yes. Yeah. That place,
Flying W.
Yeah.
So I always remember it because it was a ranch that like, game hunters went to. So they had all bunked out cabins. So everybody basically got sleeping arrangements. And the next day we like tooled around in the place. That was pretty cool. That was like a good way to see something in Texas that's not typical, you know?
Mm-hmm. So my question is, how did you end up being the driver when, you know, how did that come about?
So I kind of, what happened was I had a lot of bands over the years. And so I was learning very little. And when I say very little, I was making a lot of mistakes to learn very little. And when we put that band together, it went over really well quickly. But what I knew was from, I was hanging out with a lot of touring musicians at that point. And then I knew we had to get out of state.
Yeah.
And how am I going to get the guys out of state? I said, we're going to have to buy a bus. So we found this bus for like 10 grand. It was a bluegrass band. It was a fairly popular bluegrass band that owned it. And I bought it from them, but we couldn't afford a driver. You know, at that point we were losing money on the road. Actually, we were still losing money even when we driving. So I actually registered it and insured it as a motorhome. Which is a huge difference, because if I would have done commercial as a band, it would have been so expensive. So because I registered as a motorhome, I was really nervous about anybody else driving it like that.
That makes sense. That makes fucking sense. Yeah.
And especially these guys. Now you're hearing the stories of these guys. I'm going to put one of those guys behind that wheel at 2 a.m. And, you know, that ain't happening. So I knew I had to be behind that wheel the whole time.
Yeah.
We got a driver. We got a driver eventually, but I think
that makes fucking sense that that's what you did. Yeah.
And I knew once we got that bus and we got out of state, and it actually worked out great because I got, because of that bus, Meredith Oakes, who was one of the personalities at Sirius XM, she was on Outlaw Country and she was on the show Freewheeling. She saw the bus and she goes, Jay, you know, I have a 3-hour talk show and it's centered around truck drivers. It's entertainment for everybody, but it's centered around truck drivers. You're CB Radio, you're a band and your band's name is CB Radio. You got to come into the studio. And I said, wow, you know, the studio she's at is right next to Howard Stern and all the Sirius studios at that point. So I said, man, I just want to come in and see the whole thing. So I get into the studio and I walk in and she flips on my mic and she says, you're the guest host today. I'd never done any radio other than for the band. I had never hosted any radio. And I did the 3-hour show and she goes, you know, everybody loves you here. Do you want to come back as the guest host whenever the other host is out, which turned out to be like 25, 30, 35 times a year. So I was over the next 10 years, I was in and out of Sirius a lot, got to meet cool people. But the great part is we would go on tour with this bus that said CB Radio and truck drivers started to get to know me from the radio show because it was nationally broadcast. And we would be down in Tennessee and we'd hear a truck driver go like this. We'd get back from the tour and I'd go on Sirius and I would be getting calls going, I saw you guys in North Carolina. So the bus ended up being like the greatest advertisement in the world for the band. It just turned out, you know, it worked out so well and it gave us a lot of status, you know, as a band, just being, I mean, it's kind of the funny thing about the world, right? It's like more people were interested in the bus than a performance. You know, I mean, isn't this the way the world is? It'd be like, what'd you think of the performance? Oh, I don't know. I didn't really watch, but can I go on the bus? You know, I give up, man. I give up.
Yeah, that was, that was one of the things I remember. A lot of people would always come up to us about and ask you about the bus.
Yeah. Yeah. It always. Was like, it was more of a big deal. The bus was, I always said, you know, I probably should just show up in places in the bus and like do interviews at the bus and not even do the show, you know, just say, we're not playing. We're not doing the show. We're just going to hang out at the bus. I think we would have had a better following, you know,
whatever happened to the bus.
It is actually sitting on the farm. You were you ever at the farm?
I was. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's at the farm, the throttle cable, which runs from the front to the back. It's a 35-foot cable. It froze up. And when it freezes up, it's like somewhere under the bus. Couldn't get it loose. I was trying to sell it, park the thing. I had a friend move it with his machine and it's now a greenhouse. It's hollowed out. And you know, Linda loves flowers and plants. So she's turned it into a greenhouse.
Nice.
So it's cool. Cause it's got a huge fence with a big flower garden. I mean, huge. And the bus is sitting there and you know, it works out as a greenhouse.
Very cool. Yeah. So I'm glad you talked about the Sirius stuff there. Cause I'd always wondered like, cause we had, you know, kind of fell out of touch a little bit for a while. I knew that you were working there at Sirius. So yeah. You mentioned the farm. Are you like doing farming stuff now? Like I saw you set up at like in the summertime at like a farmer's market and stuff, right?
Yeah. I was doing microgreens. I'm actually not on the farm right now. I'm in an apartment in Milford. So I won't go. Linda and I are separated now. So fairly recently. So I'm not on the farm, although I was there today where everything is very cool between us. It's not a no problems or issues. So I was at the farm today. I was growing microgreens. Yeah. I tried it for a year. It didn't go over even as good as the band did. So I kind of said, I had fun with it. It was cool. I like to get into some stuff. I was going to farmers markets, but you know, the microgreens I mostly grew inside. They actually are like easier to grow inside the house. So I had a dedicated room for microgreens and sprouts, but Linda had a, you remember Nicole? Was Nicole on that trip? Do you remember Nicole?
No.
She's got this great flower business and Linda started up a bunch of flower gardens out on the farm and was actually selling. It's so funny because Linda could have a big operation of flowers and I could grow some microgreens And I just know how to get on the internet and make myself look like I'm doing something cool. So like everyone's like asking about the microgreens, where meanwhile, it's like Linda's operation is 10 times as big as mine, but like she doesn't promote herself, you know? So nobody knows about it, but you know, that's how the world is now.
Explain microgreens. What is that?
So a microgreen is almost any plant. You can eat it, and it's the beginning growth. So a microgreen is anywhere from like 10 to 15 days of growth. So if you take broccoli and you grow a broccoli microgreen, you plant the seeds, you kind of put them into dark state for like 2 days. Then you start underwatering them, and they grow for like 10 more days, and then you harvest them. And the nutritional value of a broccoli microgreen is like 50 times the nutritional value of broccoli. So if you eat a handful of broccoli microgreens, you're getting the same nutrition as if you eat like 5 heads of broccoli. So it's like an easy way to get a nutrition source. You could grow it really fast. You could do a lot of cool different things. You could put it on sandwiches, you could put it in shakes. So it's just a really easy way to get like high levels of nutrition. You know, you could put it in your beer. You could just put a few pieces in your beer. And, you know, then when you're drinking your beer, you're like, I'm getting nutrition with my beer.
And does it taste the same? Like for broccoli, does it taste the same?
The one that would blow your mind, it tastes similar. But the one that would blow your mind was cantaloupe. I grew a cantaloupe microgreen. So you're talking about that. It's that big. And it's green plant. And if you put it in your mouth, you tasted cantaloupe. You actually could taste the fruit from the green. So they all have similar tastes, slightly different, but similar kind of tastes. Yeah, for sure.
Well, how did you come across this? Like, where did you hear about this and learn about it?
I mean, I heard about it through various people, but like everything else, eventually YouTube. You know, eventually I went to YouTube and I go, that's how I do everything. Now I go, I can learn anything off of YouTube.
Yep.
You know, so the moment I get an idea, and I get ideas in my head, just like every year I get a new idea. I just go to YouTube and I just, I'm just going to learn it here, you know? So that's what I did. I learned how to do it. I put some shelves up for about a year. I experimented. I didn't sell. I just grew for a year, grew different ones. I did sprouts. I learned the process, learned the details, and then I took it out on the road. And it did okay. But, you know, the problem with farmers markets is, and microgreens is like a new thing people don't know about. Like the mushroom guy was making $800 a day. I was making $200 a day. And if you start going, all right, you're making $200, I was driving to one in Princeton that was an hour drive. I was there for 5 hours. I was working on the plants all week. And at the end of the week, you got $200. You're kind of like, eh, you know, people didn't grab it enough to really make the money that you needed to make it make sense, you know?
Sure. Yeah. There's a local farmer's market here. And some of the stuff, you know, it's like, you know, like microgreens, I didn't know anything about it until today. So if I saw that there, I probably would just maybe walk past it. You know what I mean?
Especially because it's expensive. You know, I was selling these containers for $5-$10 for you would get a head of broccoli for $3 and you'd get this container of broccoli microgreens and it'd be $5. And you'd be like, so people don't quite understand how it works. So they don't understand the money value of it, you know? So it's not quite there yet.
Yeah.
If you could smoke it and get high, it would sell like crazy.
Yeah. Well, you're in New Jersey, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Weed's legal there now. So you try your hand in that.
Oh, no, thank you. That's a tough game. That's a money game. You got to have some money to get into that game.
Yeah. I talked to a farmer here. He's what does he do? He has eggs and all at this farmer's market I go to. If you don't get to the eggs within, you know, the first hour, they're sold out. But he was telling me there's a lot of, we had a couple bad storms down here recently, and like this one guy lost like I forget how many chickens, like 1,000 chickens or something like that. And he was just talking about money, and he said, if you want to make $4 million a year farming, you have to spend $5
million. Yeah. 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 It's nuts. You know?
Yeah.
You, to make the money, you have to, it's like one of those businesses where you have to output so much money to make a small amount. And then if you have a bad year, you're like, you lose your shirt, you know? So it's, yep. You know, it's tough.
Yeah. One more thing I want to touch on the tour that we took together. One thing that you could say is I was sitting next to you most of the time as your navigator for some of those long 15-hour rides, because I had a pocket full of Adderall on that ride, and I was awake just as long as you were.
Look, I'm busting your chops a little bit. I'm definitely busting chops a little bit. I mean, you made a Texas bus trip, which only the interior people who I trusted pretty on a pretty high level would have been on the bus. So I knew what you were all about. And you were definitely one of the highlights of that scene, that New Jersey, Pennsylvania scene back then. Yeah, I know you were a big part of that trip.
Yeah, it was fun, man. It's something I'll never forget. Let's talk about a little bit of your poetry. You do your poetry. You have a book, right? And you have another book that you're working on, right?
I have a couple books out. I think I have three books that are out. I've got like five or six in the works. When you're a poet, you always have books in the works. You know, I always say the great thing about being a poet is there's more poets than there is an audience for poetry. So more people write than actually will listen to the poet. So it's like one of those things, you know, you're not going to make any money, you know? So it's just kind of a hobby for fun. You know, it's a fun hobby, and I like doing it. I like it for myself. Almost everything I do now, and maybe even back then, is purely for myself. And then if something, you know, if people like it and contact me and say, this is cool, whatever, you know? But I had a book 7 or 8 years ago that I released called Lore of the West that I did a book signing, and I did some audio for it, and it did okay. People bought it and were interested in it. And then I released a few that were like travelogues. Like if I went on a trip, I would write poetry every day, and then I'd come back and I would release like a travelogue poetry, which was all the poems that I wrote during the trip, you know. Stuff like that, you know.
So, like, how do you come up with this stuff? It just comes to you, like, just sort of like the way that the music would, like the songs that you would write.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about the way I wrote songs that a lot of people didn't know is I wrote almost all my songs, a large percentage of them, in my dreams, which is going to sound crazy to people, but and Linda can attest to this because she witnessed it. I fall asleep and I would start to have a dream that would turn into like a movie sequence, and it would be a song. So if it was a song that I was writing about a train, I would actually have a sequence in my head where there was this like train on like a dark night. And if it was coming around the bend, a melody kind of came to me with this scene, and I would start to have words, and I would wake up. I had a notebook next to my bed. And I would wake up and I would just write what I could think of it. Half of the time I woke up in the middle of the night, ran to the living room, grabbed my guitar, tried to get the melody in place, and started to write the words. And then I might finish it off from what I could recollect from the dream. That's kind of how I wrote a lot of those songs, you know, just popping up in the middle of the night and writing them. Poetry, it's never really happened that way. Usually it's just, as you could tell, I kind of like to talk, and a lot of words are in my head trying to escape all the time. So I just write all the time. I've been doing it since I was like 5 years old, just writing poems. I got into it really early. And it was sort of just a way to get some of the words out of my head. So whatever I see that's interests me at the time, like back then, with the band and the country rock band, I got really into cowboy movies. I was watching like every cowboy movie I could. So I wrote a book of poetry about basically the West, you know, Indians, cowboys, you know, what the landscape, and it was interesting at that time. So that's what I did, you know.
Are the songs, are you still writing music at all? Like, you, even though you're not playing out anymore, are you still writing? Like, does that still happen? Does it still, do they still come to you in your
Yeah, dreams? I get them. I kind of ignore them now, to be honest with you. I mean, I write a little bit, and I do go into like writing sessions. My buddy, you know, Anthony Kryzan, he was in the Spin Doctors.
Sure.
He's got a studio. I write with him. I do writing sessions. Those are a little different. I go in and I'm part of a writing session. So I will work with him, and I'll do a lot of lyrics. He'll do a lot of music, and we'll kind of beat something out together. But yeah, these things come to me and I just kind of ignore them now, because they wake you up when you're doing it. And, you know, I was talking to Troy, the guitar player from CB Radio. We still play together a little bit. And I said, all those guys really love to play. I love musicians. They love to play all the time. For me, I wanted to be a musician since I was five. When I was writing poetry, I was starting to write lyrics. And the performance was what I cared about. I wanted to put a performance on. I wanted to write songs that I could use my songs to go on stage and put a show together, you know. And that's what CB Radio was, my vision of, you know, the Flying Burrito Brothers come to life in, you know, 2005. So, but sort of once you get to the point for me where it's really doing a performance now, I'm not on big stages anymore. You know, if I play, I'm going to be playing local. I've lost a little interest. I've just lost a little interest in doing it because that's how I'm built. Whereas most musicians, they just want to jam most of the time. They'll just get together and jam. I just wasn't built that way. I wanted to put on a performance. And so now when these songs come up, they're actually, it's an effort for me to write these songs. I mean, they come out of me, they pour out of me. I mean, I've got notebooks, thousands of songs. You know, they're simple songs. They're not complex. I mean, I did write some complex songs at some points, but most of them are simple. So when I say I got 2,000 songs, they're simple songs, but they kind of pour out of me. But there are a certain amount of effort, because when they pour out of you like that, you hear them. If you're playing and you want to be, you know, bringing it to a band, you can't let anything go. Because you always think the next, oh, this might be the one that's something special, you know? So you're constantly at your notebook. You're constantly keeping up with it. So now that I'm out of that mode, I try to just let him go. Let him go somewhere else, because I just can't be bothered, you know? I know, that might be a sad thing to say, but.
Yeah, I mean, I do miss your music, man. I was just listening to some of the CB Radio stuff the other day, man. You guys were so fucking good, man.
It was a good band, for sure. It was a really good band. But it was, it's funny, because it was behind its time and ahead of its time. Like, we were really playing 70s country rock, right? It was not like modern country. But when we started, you know, the Chris Stapletons of the world and the Marcus Kings of the world were not around. They right. weren't really doing it. And so we were going into these honky tonks and doing that kind of raw country rock sound, and not a lot of people were doing it. And we got popular, and kind of right when it started to get popular, I kind of retooled things to a little bit, bring a little bit more rock and roll back into the band stuff. And I was just always kind of missing the mark a little bit, you know, with my decisions, but just always missing the mark a little bit. But it was a raw, it was really a band you had to see live. The recordings are fun, but like, it was one of those bands where like, I kind of, they played four or five of our songs on Sirius XM, Outlaw Country, you know, fairly regularly, but they didn't go over huge. You know, they were raw. They were for real listeners. And then the live show was really where it was at, you know?
Yeah. You guys put on an amazing live show. Always.
Yeah, it was a good live show for sure. We did good with it.
Yeah. So let's get into Pearls of Wisdom here a little bit. Your podcast. at the beginning of each show, you always play a different quote from a poet or someone. And this one stuck out to me.
This guy right here, Alan Watts.
He's Alan right Watts, yeah.
I'm pointing my finger that way. Yeah, that's him right there.
Yeah, he's one of the ones that you play a lot. But this is a Rick Rubin quote that stuck out to me. I'm paraphrasing. It's, do what you love and don't make things for other people. And that's like basically what we're doing with this podcast, or I'm trying to do with this podcast is, you know, I've had so many people say, like, you know, we do an interview podcast and like we've had pretty famous people on, like Tommy Chong and other people. And then we have, like, and nothing against you, but like I've had people say, like, you know, who's Jay Januzzi, you know, and it's not because that we're looking for, like, you know, thousands of views from your followers. It's because I want to talk to you, you know, because I haven't talked to you in a long time. And, you know, I've always found you fascinating. The band was fucking great. You know, you took me to Texas with you on a whim, not knowing me very well. You know, it's a cool story. So like, that's what we're doing here. And, your podcast, it's heavy, man. Like, for you to sit there and talk about some of the stuff that you talk about for, you know, 45 minutes, it's Ray did a podcast by himself. That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah, it's not easy to do it by yourself, man. It's you really got to be in touch with your emotions and just where you want to go when you're doing it by yourself. It's tough.
Yeah, you know, it's you end up letting out a lot of honesty, I think, because of that. You know, that's what people said to me when I started it. I wasn't even thinking. I wanted to start using my voice for something. And everyone started writing me saying, we like how honest you're being about things. And to be truthful with you, I didn't realize I was like, really, it's just the way I talk. I've always talked that way. And it came out that way. And you know, it's amazing how many people contact me now to talk about some of the subjects. But see, I look at your show, like, to me, it's almost like, you know, remember when we were younger and there would be like three blowout parties in a row? So like on the fourth night, a bunch of guys just hung out at the table and kind of just chatted about what went on, what the parties were. Like, that's kind of almost how I see your guys' show. It's like a hangout session after stuff happens. And, you know, when I went on Sirius, we had a lot of big name guests, because people that would go through Howard would then a lot of times come through our show. So it was a lot of big people. But what I realized pretty quickly was a lot of the audience, as much as they were cool guests, they wanted to know about the hosts, you know, even more so than the guests, because they were listening every day because they're hosts. So, like, you know, that's why I'm glad coming on here and telling, you know, Casey stories, because I think probably people listening are not that interested in Jason Januzzi. They're interested in Casey. So they want to hear Casey stories. You know, if I had Ray stories, I could probably tell Ray stories without even really knowing them.
Because good.
Yeah. I know what he's all about. Like, you two guys would have been sitting at my table in high school, at my kitchen table, after a party. You two guys would have been the guys that, all right, let's go over to the diner at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, smashed and have, you know, something to eat. You know, that's the vibe I get. Like, you guys are, you guys give your guests a lot of freedom to talk. You know, I've seen a bunch of the shows and the guests really kind of get to take over the show. It's, I think for everyone, it's probably really nice when you guys get to interject yourselves into it, you know?
Yeah, that's what we've been trying to do. Like, you know, we don't have too many shows anymore where it's just Ray and I, because we do have guests booked until April. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're trying to do is, like, you know, you mentioned Howard a couple times. Like, I was trying to explain this to someone else, like, and he was like, I can't believe you're comparing yourself to Howard Stern or Joe Rogan. I was like, but like, I don't listen to Rogan or Howard because of the guests that they're having on. I listen to them because of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I find them interesting in the way that they speak to the people, you know?
I mean, when I was younger, I listened to Howard a lot during the wild years. Those were my favorite years. And I was young, so it made sense. But But I was always kind of a little disappointed, even if it was a cool guest. I was always kind of like, ah, guest is coming in for the next hour. Like, can we get back to the other stuff, the crazy stuff, you know? But yeah, it's true. That's, you know, the way to do it. This podcast, my podcast, Pearls of Wisdom, is sort of just a way to get some creative thinking out into the world for myself and that kind of thing. And I try to use quotes like that Rick Rubin, just so people understand if they're listening to my podcast, it's just beating some ideas down. Let's just come up with some ideas that are a little bit wild and crazy and different and go from there. You guys are kind of have a more, you know, polished show, you know, than that going on. So, plus you've been in the business now for a long time.
Yeah. we're more of like, we talked about, you're a solo show, you know, you're talking about, it's, you know, Jay's Pearls of Wisdom, basically, you know, you're getting stuff off of your chest. What we're trying to do here is, as far as the interviews go, is, well, for example, Mark Singer, the Beastmaster, he's told us he can't, there's not one Beastmaster question that he has not been asked. He's answered all the Beastmaster questions, you know?
Yeah.
So we want to make it more of like a conversation and, you know, talk about some of the stuff that people may not have seen that he wants them to see, you know, like.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the smart thing to do. I mean, I'm going to start having some guests on my show, and they're not going to be famous people. Obviously they're going to be people I think are interesting. And I've already told them that we're not talking about the thing you do, whatever you do. We're not even talking about it. I'm going to come up with a subject that I think fits you that has nothing to do with that. And that's what we're going to talk about. Because it's true. It's like you get these famous people and it's just like, it'll get boring fast if you're asking the same old things. And for you, it's not as much because you're hearing it first time. But that guest has said it a million times and the people listening that know the guest have heard it a million times.
Right.
So it's like, you know.
And some of the times, like there's been guests too. And it's kind of really only happened once that I can remember. But like I didn't put too much research into this because I've known you for a long time. And, you know, I took a little bit of notes, but when I do interviews, I do a lot of research because of that fact, I don't want to ask them the same questions that they've been asked. So I'll watch, you know, hours of interviews that they've done before and movies and all TV shows, everything. And for the most part, you know, this has never happened, but it's one specific time I remember. I asked some like questions that this guy has never been asked before, but he answered the questions the way that he had specific answers that he answered with, and they were this like it didn't have anything to do with like what we were asking him, but he was like so programmed to those questions and answers that people normally ask, and then he would say what he was saying, and then he would go, I actually forgot what you asked me.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like a football player or a basketball player or something. They, when they get done with a game, I mean, why even ask the questions at this point? They are all trained to answer the thing a exact certain way. And you're never going to get, you know, once in a blue moon, you get a weird answer and then it's all over the place. But in general, you know, you don't get that. But yeah, you know, that's a smart thing to do, Case, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been trying to get this guy on. He was on another famous podcast, and I've been trying to get him on. And he actually emailed me back right away and said, you know, he's been on a lot of different podcasts and he's tired of being asked the same different questions. And I said, well, you can go through our catalog. Like we don't ask the same questions. And he was like, well, I said, how about I check back in with you at the end of the year? He's like, you can check back in with me, but I don't know if I'll do it. Like, all right, whatever.
Hey, keep working on them. It took you 15 years to get me on. You asked me three or four times. I was like, well, what am I going to? And actually, you know what you know, this is what the audience doesn't get to know about these kind of things. When you wrote to me about coming on here, I said, Casey, what am I going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? And he goes, I'm just going to have some sweet ass conversation. I think that was the exact line. We're just going to have some sweet ass conversation. I go, oh my God, this guy has not changed since I met him. Sweet ass conversation. I said, all right, yeah. that's let's do it. You know, let's do it.
It's funny though. I have changed in many, many ways, but I guess in that way I haven't.
No, you still don't have to socialize. You know.
Yeah, and it's so weird because like everybody says that I'm a very social person, but like I'm not a very like people friendly person. Like if I would much rather just be by myself.
Well, you know, there's people who are social and I understand that. I understand exactly what you're talking about. But you know, when you're with people, see, when you're around, it's always a good vibe. That's probably why people say you're social, is because when you are around people, the vibe's always good. And that is not really the case most of the time. You know, you might meet someone who's pretty cool a lot of times, but then you always hit these days where it's like, what the hell just happened, you know? And, you know, I never saw that with you. You were always sort of on point with where you were, you know, treating people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I always, you know, you got to treat people the way you want to be treated, you know? I posted this. It was a meme or whatever. I don't know. It was like a quote I posted on my Instagram stories the other day. It said, you know, you have a good vibration if, and then it listed a bunch of different
people. Oh, yeah.
A bunch of different things. And it was like, you know, babies like you, dogs feel comfortable, animals feel comfortable around you. People will tell you their life story. And it's like, yeah, check, check, check. Like the other day I was at the Circle K and there's like this, you know, five people behind me. And this lady behind the counter is just telling me like her whole life story. And I'm like, all right, well, you might want to take care of the rest of the people back there. But
like, and then you said, you want to come on my podcast?
Hey, Ray has said, if you want to talk to your mailman, we will talk to him.
We'll talk to anybody.
Look, I'm telling you, the truth is people who are your audience cares more about you. So it really actually doesn't matter that much who the guest is. I mean, the more interesting the guest, the better, because you're going to let them talk a lot. But really, you guys interacting with somebody is what people are looking for, you know?
Well, sure. We appreciate that, man. That's what we're going for. So,
yeah.
The only other thing I have in my notes here is the other day you posted something on Instagram that looked delicious and I never heard of it. Popovers? Is that
popovers? See, this is the thing you got to understand about me. This is why I'm an interesting guy who's not famous, is I'm constantly just changing things up. I just do different stuff all the time, whatever it might be. So I had them a few times in my life, but I went out to dinner with my brother like last year and I hadn't had them in a while. And the restaurant served them. They're like these doughy, it's based on what's called Yorkshire pudding, which is, they usually use like the end of like a stock for that when you're cooking meat or something and you got all that fat and stuff at the end. But it's a really simple kind of recipe. You get a certain pan that makes these things where the cups are like muffin cups, but they're separated. And it's just like eggs, flour, you know, milk and butter. And you put this recipe in them and they just rise up and there's these huge kind of chewy dough balls. You put a little butter on them and they're like delicious, you know, and they're actually not really hugely high in calories for what they are. And it was just a fun thing. Like I get into like cooking different things from time to time, you know, like something I see, of course, on the internet. I mean, basically everything is, it's either YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. You see something and you go, man, that looks pretty good. Well, if I see something and I think it looks kind of good, I might get into trying to make it for a while and like become a master at the popover. And I master popovers for like 6 months and then I never make another popover in the rest of my life. I go do something different. You know, so I just jump around with stuff. So that's why, in a way, like you almost can't take me too seriously, because you know when you ask about microgreens, like it's like, yeah, you're off the mark by a year with me, because I'm already moved on. I did them and I'm gone. I'm on to something else. So it's like it's hard sometimes because that's the way I am. Believe me, even with my closest friends, I go to meet them for coffee or something, I haven't seen them in a few months, and they start asking me questions, and I'm like, I don't even do that anymore. I don't have nothing to do with it. I'm doing this now. And I have to tell him what I'm doing at this time. So, yeah, that was popovers. Very interesting. Very interesting podcast subject, popovers.
Hey, they look good, man.
They are good. If I see you sometime, I'll make some for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, tell us about this Alan Watts. So I had never really heard about it. I mean, I heard the name before your podcast, but like what, so what draws you to him?
Well, you know, when you have when I was really into bands, I had people would say, you're into classic rock. You must like these guys. And I'd say, I don't like those guys at all. Because the way I was is I heard a band, I wanted to like every song. If there was like three songs I didn't like, I almost couldn't like the band. It would be like, I had to like all the obscure songs, all the B-sides, everything. Alan Watts to me is the lecture version of that. Like he doesn't say anything that doesn't resonate with me, that I don't think, wow, that's just cool. So I just listen to him all day long because he was around in the 1950s he started, through the 60s into the 70s. And he changed a lot as a person. He started off sort of, he wasn't technically a Buddhist. He didn't want to be considered a Buddhist. He was a teacher, a lecturer, and he wanted to lecture about Eastern culture just to show people that there's different cultures. And he was really interested in Buddhism. So he taught about that, but he doesn't buy into having to be any certain thing. So he started in the 50s as sort of this kind of straight guy who's, you know, he's got short hair and he's very sort of straight kind of dude. And then in the 60s, he got a little bit into the hippie culture. Then he kind of went beyond it and into the 70s. He died in the 70s. And he's a completely different looking and acting character. But his way he spoke about things never changed. You could hear a lecture from the mid-50s or from the early 70s. They contain the same vibe. And he just constantly kind of retools what he's talking about. But he's mostly just talking about, it's really common sense brought forth in the idea of, you know, looking at different spiritual, I don't want to say religions, he would look at all religions, but really more thought process of how the world works, how the universe works, all this kind of stuff. And he'll surprise you because you think, you know, you deal with spiritual type people and they a lot of times have a very specific approach to things, you know, and he'll say stuff once in a while that I'll just go, wow, I can't even believe he said that. But he was born in England. He moved to California. Most of his time he spent living in California. He lived in Sausalito for a while on like a houseboat that was a commune for like artists. And he did some lectures from there, and he did lectures at colleges, and he traveled the world. And his son, as he got older, started recording a lot of the lectures, and he always recorded his lectures. It's one of the reasons I started the podcast is because he thought it was important to record his thoughts in these lectures for another time. He was very, very much ahead of his time. So if you go on YouTube, I listen to like 3 hours a day. Sometimes I listen to 8 hours a day, just walking and listening to the guy. So there's just tons of information, lectures, and all kinds of new stuff coming out. It just makes you think about the world in a different way without having to like pigeonhole yourself into being like a quote unquote spiritual person. You know, it allows you to be everything that you are, everything you've been, whatever you think, and then still be able to see things in a different kind of way. And just use your mind that way. That's why I love them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. You're exactly what you said. It makes you think of the world in a like completely different way. And he says it like as intelligent as he is, he says it in a way. And I only know from what I've heard on your show.
Right.
I do want to start listening to some more of this stuff, but as intelligent as he is, he says it in a way too, that can make someone like me understand it, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And he never will talk, and none of them does he talk down to anyone. You know, today you go on, and I was bringing this up in some of my podcasts, you go on Instagram and you see these spiritual gurus, and it's like they're talking at people. It's like, this is the way it is to be spiritual. You need to do this to be spiritual. You need to do this. You need to meditate this way. You know, And you start to feel like you're like a grade school kid being talked at. And you're like, you know, why do I feel like inferior all of a sudden? And the guy never did that. He never made, in his talks, he never makes anybody feel that way. And he's talking to college students who are trying to learn. So he's constantly laughing at himself. He, you know, he comes from a thought process where everybody is pretty much equal and everyone's got the ability to be where he is. So that's how he talks. Yeah. So that is a big part of why I like him.
Yeah. Yeah. I dig your podcast, man. It's like I said, it's heavy at times. So it's not something I listen to. You know, I listened to a bunch of them today to try and, you know, prepare for this. But some of the stuff is pretty heavy. And one of the questions I had, like, why do you put the, it's like almost like a, sounds like you're sort of like in a church almost, like
the reverb?
Yeah, like the little, like the echo. Yeah, the reverb, I guess.
You know, I've been bringing it down. You got to realize here. I mean, how many shows have you guys done? Like 1,000? This is like my 8th show. I'm figuring shit out as I go. I wanted to do reverb. I have this great machine. I don't do it on like a computer. I do it on this soundboard that's like an analog soundboard. It's new, but it's built like a 70s analog soundboard. But it's got a digital onboard recorder so I could take it off and put it on the computer. But I wanted to have a reverb to get a sense of being like hanging out in like a light, like a dimly lit place where you're just kind of hanging out and, you know, there's this voice coming at you. But then people make comments on too much. So I've been downgrading it. I'm trying to keep it in I'm trying not to get rid of it completely. And each one, I think I'm getting closer. You know, I've had to make a lot of technical changes because, you know, I'm 8 shows in. Talking about, you know, trying to emulate guys like Joe Rogan and stuff. I went back and I listened to Joe Rogan's first
episode. Oh, yeah.
Let me go listen to Joe Rogan's first podcast to compare myself to see how professionally it was out the gate. And I was just like, the first 15 minutes is they're just trying to even figure out how to get the computer started. I mean, I'm like, okay, I feel okay. I could take maybe 20 or 25 episodes to work out the kinks here.
Yeah. I
don't feel too bad about it, but.
You know. Yeah, we're 140 some episodes in, and we still have there's weeks where I'll go in to edit it, and I'm like, well, my microphone wasn't turned on.
Yep.
And it's just coming through the computer speaker, you know, and it's like, yeah, fuck it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I wanted to try to do a whole mic setup for this because I don't go through the computer. So I knew this is going to be different. And I got a cord to go into my computer. It didn't work. It was the wrong one. And I mean, I know stuff from music. I know audio stuff. But the stuff I had to get to try to do that with my board, and I was just like, forget about it. Like, I don't think people realize one thing is like when you're putting on a podcast, they think you guys are sitting there at your place on a computer. Like, what is that? They don't understand, especially when you're doing it over and over again, that there's constantly like all these little factors. There's a lot of little factors to make the thing work right. And when you're on a weekly basis, it's just coming up on you. It's coming up on you again. And stuff like that can happen where all your mic wasn't on. You know, it's like to pay attention to every little detail when you don't have a crew. It's just like in the band, if you don't have a crew, it's you. You know, yep. So things happen. But that's what a podcast is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 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 We're not Ray told me a story. I guess it was a couple weeks ago. He was on another podcast and his microphone wasn't on 1 week. And
I was trying to figure out though, because I heard him telling that story and I was like, wait, is he saying he said stuff to the lip sync? Were you recording to your own lips?
So, yeah, I went back and I re-recorded the entire thing. I basically just, for every fucking, you know, 02, say this. 2 minutes in, say this. Oh, I re-recorded 45 minutes of dialogue to match it up.
Edited the dialogue into the video.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
That's a nightmare. I mean, that people, most people cannot understand what that actually means.
And I nailed it, but man, was that a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah, a total nightmare. I know exactly. I mean, it's from doing music and everything, I know exactly what he's talking about. And I was watching it going, yeah. I actually wanted to ask that. I had it in my mind. I have to ask, were you recording the audio to a video that was already made? Yeah. That is insane. That is actually, that's probably, if they give podcast awards out and there's something in that category, that would win that category of audio.
Yeah, that sucked. That sucked.
I had one, I actually asked one guest to do that. And it was only for, I think it was either one word or two words. And it's Peter Anthony. I'll say he's a good friend of ours. I don't know if it was my computer or his computer, but somebody's computer froze, but it was like a very key part to the story. And I needed him to say, "Oh shit." And he said it and it was like perfect. He was like, I can't believe that it was fucking perfect.
Yeah. As far as music goes too, though, lip syncing sucks ass.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do,
you know, and when we made video, a lot of times when you make videos, you take your track because you want it to be the best track. And then you cut the video. We did it with this last band. And then you have to cut to the track and re-sing it without that being your voice.
Yeah.
So like, I know it from that, even doing that when you're blasting the song back on your mic and you're trying to re-sing the song. And you realize, like, you sing different every time.
Yeah.
And then trying to match that audio up, what you end up doing is you take whatever audio matches you use, and then you cut away when the audio doesn't match. You cut the guitar player or something. You know? I mean, it's a crazy to have to do it where you have to nail the whole thing is insane.
That sucks ass. And I will say, I did it in one take. I fucking nailed it.
That's unbelievable.
I'm pretty fucking proud of that, quite honestly.
It's unbelievable.
So any band in the works? Are you playing any music at all?
No. I just had a band called Sweet Fanny Adams, played a little bit. It was good. It was a cool band. In fact, we were doing like all original music. That was my thing. I was just like, let's put out a local band that plays original music because nobody's doing it. And the bass player got sick. Some other things happened. We kind of let it go. I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm believe it or not, I'm going into massage therapy school. I'm going to be a massage therapist. Throw that on your list of things to talk about. And I'm doing the podcast. I'm also working on reading audiobooks as part of my career. Reading audiobooks and stuff like that. One of the reasons I'm doing the podcast is because I'm preparing to go into that industry of reading audiobooks. And I wanted to start using my voice so I could get used to how my voice worked. So that's one of the reasons I did the podcast. So I'm doing that, and I'm doing a lot more kind of on my own rather than going into the band situation. So I don't think I'm going to go back in because, you know, right now it's just really about if I do, it's just a local scene. And there's not really that much of a local scene besides cover bands, tribute bands. And it's just that's never been my thing, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy how the scene has like died, like the local scene has died off since you got even in where well, I'm in Tallahassee now, but from where I grew up in Reading, and then even like up in Wilkes-Barre, there was the Cabinet where those guys were playing. Like, it's all like pretty much dead. Like, there's not even a big music scene anymore.
John and Peters, I just heard at New Hope, which is this tiny little club that's tiny, but it's been there forever. I just heard that they're probably going to be closing their doors. So, I mean,
wow,
you know, it's all shutting down. Young people just aren't. Young people want to go to a concert or an event or stay home or something. They're not that into the going into a little club. And if there's a DJ, maybe, Or they'll go to a city and go to see somebody at a bigger place. It's just different. There's not garage bands anymore. You know, there's not a bunch of guys that sit around and play and say, let's go play for $300, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not, like you said, like it's cover bands. Like that's the thing. Everybody wants to see, nobody wants to see original music anymore.
No, not, well, you know, our age group, it's, you know, time is funny because these things happen and we kind of all relate these things to the, you know, the corridors of time. But like our time is very specific. When we say nobody wants to hear original music, we're kind of talking about ourselves in this age group. And like we wanted when we were 25, 30, we wanted new original bands. But now we're looking at it from an older perspective where most of people we know are like, they don't want to be bothered trying to bring something new like that into their lives, you know?
Right.
And so
that's been my argument for years, though. I've like people have always said, I mean, as long as I've been listening to music, people have always been saying there's no good new music coming out. And it's like, well, you're not looking in the right places. You're listening to terrestrial radio. That's why you don't know about good music coming out.
And you're like, you know, it was funny when Greta Van Fleet came out, you know, I started listening to him. And like a lot of people gave the band grief. I mean, they sound like Led Zeppelin. I go, yeah, well, every one of those bands we liked sounded a little like each other. I mean, you've been begging for a classic rock band to come out, and a classic rock band came out, and now you're going to find something wrong with it. Like, just give the guys a chance. Listen to them. And they came out, and it was like the older people won't listen to them. But then you see them in like Brazil, and there's 100,000 people at their concert singing their songs, and you look – and they're people that probably don't even know who the Doors are. You know, they're not people that they're people into the band now. And the older people who should list, give them a little bit more of a chance. They were waiting for this. They don't really give them a chance. So there is some of that, but younger people don't listen to that rock and roll. It's not in, you know, wasn't what they grew up on. So they're not going to, and a lot of them actually do. A lot of them do actually listen to Zeppelin. My nephew, who's much younger, he's listening to the Doors and Zeppelin. He started playing the piano. He's going back and playing all that music. He's into it, but they're also into the other stuff, you know?
Right.
And they're more likely to go see the concerts of a newer band coming up than they are, you know, to see a bunch of old guys who are doing it. They're not doing it the way they used to do it, even if they're still playing, you know?
Right.
So it's, you know, it's not worth getting hung up on. You know?
No. Yeah. And especially for like, you know, guys like you, the amount of effort that you put into it and then the return that you get back on it, it's, you know, is it really worth it anymore? You know?
Well, in the old days, it was all or nothing. You know, you put all that effort in and people don't realize how many bands, I mean, one out of, you know, 1,000 bands did anything. And then one out of 10,000 hit it to the point of being able to have a career. So all those other bands are out there putting that effort into it from our time period. But if you made it, you were big, you know, it was like you were treated like rock stars. Yep. Now it's like you can do a lot of the stuff you need to do from the internet. You don't put as much time into it as far as the music, but you put more time into it as far as the promotion, the online stuff. And then a record company comes along, and if they think you got something, usually you got to have contacts these days, they throw you up there and they build your career from there. You know, they don't build it necessarily from the talent. They build it from the fact that they think it's going to sell, you know, whatever it's going to sell. Yeah.
Do you ever think back to like, imagine if on that tour that we went on to Texas, if like Instagram or something like that would have been around, like how big the band could have been. I mean, cause you guys were fucking good, man.
Well, we could have been big.
There was really no like social media back then to like really promote this stuff. Right there. Maybe MySpace, I guess, was back then.
MySpace. And you know what? Well, we started the band with MySpace. And let me tell you something. I was into this social media thing right off the bat. I didn't have a problem with it because I saw, you got to realize, I came from a time period where Troy, the guitar player, we had originally had a band called 20 Miles of Bad Road. It was an awesome rock band. I mean, we were in our early 20s. We were like the Doors meet the Who. You might even have liked that band better than CB Radio. We were wild. We were writing great originals. But we hung posters on telephone poles, on buildings. Our mailing list, we had to, when we finally built a following, and we looked at each other and said, we can't afford to do our mailing list because we were mailing by mail. It was like $200 in stamps every month we had to do. And we weren't making that kind of, we were like, we have to spend $200 in stamps for this following we're building. And that's what we were doing. We were sending them to people's mailboxes. And then MySpace came and I was like, wow, you know, this gives me an outlet. And a lot of our early fans, MySpace allowed you to do this, which a lot of musicians were always like, there's nowhere to play, you can't get fans. And I was like, you guys are wrong. I got a country rock band in New Jersey and we're getting an audience. And I said, this is how I do it. I go on MySpace and I could type in the search box, Pattenberg House, Johnny Cash. And anybody who liked the Pattenberg House and Johnny Cash came up. I would write them a note and I'd go, I see you like Johnny Cash. It's cool. I'm a Johnny Cash fan too. And they'd write back and say, oh, cool. I said, I live right around you. I actually got a band that's playing the Pattenberg House. And you show up to the Pattenberg House and there'd be like 15, 20 new people. And yep. I could go from club to club that way. And then everyone started abusing it and putting stupid stuff up and that kind of thing. But initially, using MySpace, I built a lot of our following by using that tool that way. It was great, you know. But, you know, if we had Instagram, a lot of stuff probably wouldn't have happened. Because a lot of happened, it would have been, you know, we, especially the early days, you get in trouble because you had to start to get into this whole mindset of, you got to be careful what you say and do and put on Instagram, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've been told by someone here in this household that I need to stop posting pictures of all the beers that I drink on Sundays.
Hey, look, you know, it's like you were just talking about you got laid off from your job, I think. Is that recent?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I was thinking like, you know, having a podcast like this where you're talking about smoking weed and drinking beer all day long. And then you go get hired somewhere and they go, let me go look into your podcast. You go, how does that work? You know, your employer gets to know too much about you, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's what was nice about my previous job is that everybody got along, if you know what I meant, if you know what I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. But that is something that, you know, one of the things that you should know about me, though, all these years, Jay, is I've never really given a shit as to what people have thought about me. So,
no, and you shouldn't because you're happy, you know, you're where you want to be. But, you know, the next job, when you get in on Monday and you're slow, the boss is going to go, well, yeah, of course. I listen to Sunday's podcast. I know why you're slow on Monday.
Did I miss anything here, Ray? You got any questions for Jay?
You didn't miss anything. The only thing I would say is, do you like being on the road?
You know, I loved it. And I'll tell you what, it definitely isn't for anyone. I definitely saw band members like fall apart. I saw guys fall apart. Like, I mean, nervous breakdowns pretty much almost. For me, my dream was always to be on the road, live on the road. But I knew the reality of it. Because I was a student of rock and roll from the time I was a kid. And I knew I paid attention to interviews, to documentaries. And I knew it wasn't a party. I knew it was the party part was going to wear you down because of all the other stuff. So I knew what it was all about. I always loved to travel. You know, when I was in high school, a bunch of friends one night at like midnight, I said, you know what? You know, we were in New Jersey and I said, we've never been to New Orleans. And everyone's like, yeah, we got to go. And I go, let's get in my car. And we jumped in my car and they fell asleep. And I drove to New Orleans and we were there like, you know, 20 hours later, straight drive, pulled into New Orleans. And I was just like, well, I can't go to sleep now. This place is unbelievable. But that was I loved being driving these long hauls. So my dream was to be with a band on the road. But what breaks down a lot of musicians is when they realize there's a 3 or 4 o'clock sound check and you get done with the show, and you load out and it's midnight. You might get a hotel for 6 hours. You get back on a bus. You drive into sound check. You sound check. You drive back to the hotel. You take an hour or two just to decompress. You go back to the venue. You put on the show. And the next day is that way too until it's done and you get home. Bands do it differently now. They fly to places. They don't put those schedules. Allman Brothers' schedule was like 340 shows the first year they played. I mean, they were just out every day. A lot of those bands were. So that's why these bands went nuts and threw TVs out the hotel windows because they had to let off steam, you know. And, you know, I saw a lot of that. For me, I knew how to take it on. But for a lot of musicians, I noticed the moment we got out there that way, it was like, uh-oh, we're going to be replacing. It's one of the reasons I went to bass. I was originally up front playing acoustic, and I had to pick up a bass because we just kept going through bass players. You know, I saw guys kind of lose it a little bit going out on the road.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a tough business for sure.
Yeah.
100%.
It's kind of like farming, you know. you put a lot in to get a little out until it pops, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yep. Jay, this has been awesome, man. You got anything else to say? You want to plug anything?
No, I don't care about all that business. I hope I did good for you guys. I hope people are interested to some degree.
Yeah, this was awesome, man.
Yep.
This was awesome. It was great to catch up with you. And stick around after I hit end recording here. Stick around. I got to go to the bathroom, but I want to just talk to you about a couple other things before you go.
You got it, man. I will.
All right.
Hey.
All right.
Ray, well, it was great. Great meeting you, Ray.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Fantastic meeting you.
All right. We will see everyone next week. Thank you, Jay.
You got it, man.